Chapter 15 Jobs and Occupation
第十五章工作与职业
Unit 15 Jobs and Occupation
工作与职业
Conversations Part 1 An interview between a woman and an officer of the company.
I wonder if you'd mind telling me your full name, please, Miss Howard?
Miranda Howard.
Thank you. Now, let me see. You were an English major, weren't you?
Yes, that's right. I graduated from New Hampshire State College.
When was that?
In 1997.
So you've been out of school for about 5 years?
Right.
And could you tell me what kind of office experience you've had?
Well, I'm working for Britain Airlines at the moment.
And what do you do there exactly?
I'm in financial department.
I see. And how long have you been with them?
For 4 years.
And would you mind telling me your present salary?
I'm making $1,500 a month at present.
$1,500? Uh-huh. Okay, well, you have read the job description for this position. Part 2.Wang Lin, a student from China, is telling George, an English friend, why he came to study architecture in England.
What did you say you were going to take up as a career?
Architecture? Actually, I've already started.
What are you going to do when you finish?
Oh, I shall go back home and practice there. There's a great deal of scope for architects in my country, and a lot of useful work to be done.
Will you need English in your job?
It'll be useful in many ways, because there's a lot about architecture written in English.And besides, many professional people in my country use English as a second language. When you attend international conferences, English is so often the official language.
What made you decide to choose architecture as a career?
Well,I was good at maths and art at school, and I think I had a certain feeling for design. And I also suppose my personal qualities made me choose architecture.
Part 3. Ms. Moore is interviewing Ms. White.
Let's discuss your educational background.Miss White, you were a law major, weren't you? Yes, that's right. It was my best subject at college. Fine. And could you tell me what kind of work experience you've had? My last position was with Joanna and Fraser. That's a law firm in Chicago. And when was that exactly?From 1993 to 1996? Mm-hmm. Before that, I worked for SoftLogic Computer Company, Limited. Well, Miss White, your qualifications for the job are excellent. Could you tell me what kind of salary you are expecting? Well, in my last job, I was making $1,900 a month. I understand that this position has a starting salary of around $2,000 a month. That's right. That would be fine with me. Is there anything you'd like to ask about the job? Yes, I'd like to know if the company provides opportunities for further education. Yes, our employees are allowed to take up to 6 hours a week at full pay to attend college courses. That's great. Anything else? No, not at this time. Well, we'll call you this week. Thank you. I appreciate your talking with me.
Part 4. Williams is discussing with Chuck about an applicant who applied for the position of journalist. Have you ever looked at this application yet?
The one from the plaza, you mean? Yeah, I've just read it.
Has he ever worked on a newspaper before?
No, not exactly, but he used to edit a magazine when he was in college.
Well, that's good. And what did he do after?
Well, after he finished school, he went to Seattle.
Oh, really? What did he do there?
He was an English teacher in an elementary school, and while he was teaching there, he wrote some really fine articles.
Uh-huh. And what's he been doing since then?
He's been working as a freelance journalist for the past 2 years.
Sounds quite good. Maybe he is our man. Passage. How to write a winning resume. The main purpose of a resume is to convince an employer to grant you an interview. There are two kinds. One is the familiar tombstone that lists where you went to school and where you have worked in chronological order. The other is what I call the functional resume. Descriptive, fun to read, unique to you, and much more likely to land you an interview. It's handy to have a tombstone for certain occasions. But prospective employers throw away most of those unrequested tombstone lists, preferring to interview the quick rather than the dead. What follows are tips on writing a functional resume that will get read. A resume that makes you come alive and look interesting to employers. Put yourself first. In order to write a resume which others will read with enthusiasm, you have to feel important about yourself. Sell what you can do, not who you are. Practice translating your personality traits, character, accomplishments, and achievements into skill areas. There are at least 5,000 skill areas in the world of work. Toot your own horn. Many people clutch when asked to think about their abilities. Some think they have none at all. But everyone does. And one of yours may just be the ticket an employer would be glad to punch, if only you show it. Be specific, be concrete, and be brief. turn bad news into good. Everybody has had disappointment in work. If you have to mention yours, look for the positive side. Never apologize. If you're returning to the workforce after 15 years as a parent, simply write a short paragraph, summary of background, in place of a chronology of experience. Don't apologize for working at being a mother. It's the hardest job of all. If you have no special training or higher education, just don't mention education. How to psych yourself up. The secret is to think about the self before you start writing about yourself. Take 4 or 5 hours off, not necessarily consecutive, and simply write down every accomplishment in your life on or off the job that made you feel effective. Don't worry at first about what it all means. Study the list and try to spot patterns. As you study your list, you will come closer to the meaning, identifying your marketable skills. Once you discover patterns, give names to your cluster of accomplishments. Leadership skills, budget management skills, child development skills, etc. Try to list at least 3 accomplishments under the same skills heading. Now start writing your resume as if you mattered. It may take 4 drafts or more and several weeks before you've ready to show it to a stranger. Friends are usually too kind for a reaction. When you're satisfied, send it to a printer. A printed resume is far superior to photocopies. It shows an employer that you regard job hunting as serious work. Words and expressions.
Major.
Airline.
Financial.
Salary.
Position.
Take up.
Professional.
Subject.
Firm.
Qualification.
Employee.
Application.
Freelance.
Resume.
Grant.
Chronological.
Tombstone.
Unique.
Handy.
Prospective.
Tip.
Enthusiasm.
Trait.
Toot.
Horn.
Clutch.
Psych somebody up.
Consecutive.
Cluster.
Budget.
Draft.
Photocopy. Exercises. Section 1. Listening Comprehension. Listen to the record. Answer each question by choosing A, B, C, or D from the 4 possible choices. A. 1. Is there any chance of my having a job in your company?
I'm afraid that you basically cannot. Why not try another place to see another boss? 2. Can you come to my birthday party tomorrow afternoon?
I'd like to, but I can't. I'll be in surgery at 3 o'clock. I'll be operating on a patient then. 3. But I still can't understand, Jane. Why are you working for JD Company?
JD offered me a job as a secretary, and I need a job. 4. Have a seat. What can I do for you?
I'm going to be an engineer, but I'm having a little trouble deciding which field to go into. 5. Make 30 copies for me and 20 copies for Mr. Brown.
Sure, sir. As soon as I have typed this letter. 6. Mary worked as a secretary for 3 years. Then she became a reporter. After that, she started writing novels.
I know, and she has been doing nothing else ever since.
7. Open wide. Now, show me where it hurts.
Here, on the bottom, especially when I bite into something hot or cold. B.
On the matter of employer-employee relations, we read a lot and hear a lot about union problems and strikes.
Well, I think that, from an employer standpoint, the easiest thing for an employer to do would be to join a union.
Could you make it clear?
The reason is that you have the security of never having to worry about having employees.
Mm-hmm.
You'd be meeting a certain criteria because the union set the criteria for the people that work, their salaries, their fringe benefits, and so on.
And you probably have one outfit to deal with.
That's correct. So from the employee standpoint, of course, you have the problem that the employee is a captive to a set of criteria.
Yes, that's right.
And his freedom is greatly reduced because of the fact that his bargaining agent is someone else. It's not himself.
He is no longer in an individual-to-employer situation.
That is correct.
Is it a trade-off to a certain extent?
My feeling is that's one of the great advantages working for a small business which is non-union. You have a higher degree of freedom. And that it's much easier from the employee standpoint.
Mm-hmm. That's fine.
But when you become a captive to any big organization, whether it's a corporation, a union, or a government, you just absolutely lose your freedom.
See, I'm the manager of the department called the Banking and Portfolio Department for a large multinational corporation. The responsibility of that department is to handle all the banking matters. Relationship, credit issue, opening and closing accounts. We also manage the investment of the company's excess funds. The best thing about working in the department that we have is that you get to take decisions at a relatively low management level in the company. You get to watch the decision come, follow through, and you get to see the effect on the bottom line profit of the company. We are one of the few areas within a world, within a headquarters type atmosphere where there is a profit center, bottom line. One of the things I find most frustrating is that the company is still very bureaucratic. We tend to produce a lot of paperwork and reports that don't seem to have any fit with today's company business. And they've been generated for years, and we continue to generate them because management has asked for them. We are attempting to change that, but it continues to be a source of frustration for myself and my staff.
Supplementary reading. Learn to love your job. Is your job running you over like a lawnmower? You spend too much time at work to be miserable. Stop the madness. You can go through by putting the following advice into action. Be honest with your boss. Your boss may be talented and inspirational, but probably not a mind reader. If you are frustrated at work, speak up. Your boss has a right to know if you are feeling undervalued, burned out, or desperately in need of a more flexible schedule. There are, of course, ways to conduct this talk so that you don't sound whiny or hopelessly confused. You may be more appreciated and have more options than you thought. A good boss can give you strategies to pull your attitude out of a funk. Give it a chance and be honest in your discussion. Let the job bring out your best. If you have a job that matches your skills poorly, you will end up having it. For example, sales jobs are not for everyone. An introverted, quiet person is likely to feel uncomfortable chasing down some sales quota. Your job should fit like a glove, not force you to be something you are not. Unfitting jobs cause stress, according to psychologist Bill Gawford. Stress is a signal that something needs to change. Suffering is when we don't make the change, Crawford explains. Often we don't listen to the signal of stress in our lives until it becomes a severe problem. If your job is not fulfilling, get creative. Drastic changes are not always necessary. Arlene S. Hirsch, author of Love Your Work and Success Will Follow, tells the story of a banker with strong financial analysis skills who was experiencing great job dissatisfaction. He recaptured his love for music by accepting a job as CFO for a symphony orchestra. Smart move. Acknowledge your anger. If you really hate your job, it's likely you are fired up about something. Pinpointing the source of your anger is a crucial first step. According to Dr. Hendry Weisinger, there are 5 main anger-provoking work situations. 1. Being left out. Not being accepted by your peers severely limits how effective you can be on the job and shakes your fundamental need for acceptance. 2. Critical bosses. Nitpicking bosses are infuriating. 3. Not getting promoted. You try your best and it's never acknowledged. 4. Being maligned by coworkers. Being victimized by false rumors is a consistent anger arouser. 5. Incompetent bosses. An incompetent boss can stifle your enthusiasm and torpedo your chances for job satisfaction. Get rid of grudges. When people work together, hurt feelings, misunderstandings, and cross words are inevitable. If you are mistreated at work, you'll be tempted to get even. Be careful. Making enemies can lead straight to job misery. Even if you have been treated unfairly, you can take the high road. While practicing forgiveness may be the last thing you want to do, it is often the wisest move. Offenders may not deserve your kindness, but you do. By forgiving abusive jerks, you are actually giving yourself a break. Sure, you can quit your job in a huff and seek greener pastures elsewhere. Find a place where people treat you with the love and respect that you deserve. Right? Wrong. You will find challenging coworkers wherever you go. They just look different and have different names. You'd be better off finding ways to live in peace with people with various value system. Above all else, try to keep your perspective. We all hate our jobs occasionally. The trick is to keep those times few and far between. Putting these tips into practice will help you gain greater satisfaction at work. And when you consider that happy employees are more likely to get along, isn't that a goal worth smiling about?